It's the My Michelle Live Podcast.
Looking for the God story and news of the day. My Michelle Live, news and views. Here's Michelle.
Hey, thank you, big voice guy. I am Michelle Mendoza, and we are setting up for our News and Views Thursday podcast. But you, if you're watching this live, are getting to get a little inside look. If not, you can always watch the rebroadcast at mymichellelive.com. This Thursday, we're going to be talking about what's going on at the border.
The subject that helped propel former President Trump into the White House and may be one of the biggest challenges facing President Biden now. What to do about the crisis at the border? Right now, senior DHS officials telling ABC News there is a significant surge of migrants crossing illegally into the U.S. Today we learned the 13 people killed in a horrific crash in California were smuggled through a hole in a border fence before their SUV, packed with 25 people, collided into a semi-truck a short time later. This as the White House is floating sweeping changes to our immigration system.
Well, look, I guess I should be flattered. People are coming because I'm the nice guy. That's the reason why it's happening.
Yeah, Joe, nice guy or not, doesn't seem very nice what's happening to these people. It doesn't seem very nice, the human suffering. And today we're going to be talking with experts and people who were there as it took place and find out what's really going on, because some of what's being reported, we're not allowed to see. We're not allowed to get cameras in. We're not allowed to report on. But what one, and that report was from ABC, the one earlier. This is from ABC as well. They share what they could see from the air. Listen to this.
The helicopter circled low, skimming the treetops. Border Patrol agents dove into the brush.
Helicopters flying low. There are a number of vans here to pick up a group of migrants that apparently smuggled across the border and is hunkered down inside this orchard somewhere.
It took officials about half an hour to find the 16 migrants they said were hiding in this orchard. And there, on the side of a highway hugging the Rio Grande, they were ordered to remove the few things they carried.
So what you're seeing is these migrants being told to take off their shoelaces. That's something that they have to do before they're taken into custody. No belts, no shoelaces.
More came filing out of the brush, the foliage from their hiding places clinging to their clothes. Border Patrol officers and police asked if they needed water. The new detainees weren't cuffed. They were just loaded up and driven out. It's a process that has become remarkably efficient because it has to be. Mexico border now experiencing what senior DHS officials tell ABC News is a significant surge of crossings. The Biden administration has so far not permitted the Border Patrol to grant interviews or ride-alongs with the media, but the border is so active right now, especially near McAllen, Texas, that simply following Border Patrol traffic can lead reporters to apprehensions.
People are coming because I'm the nice guy. That's the reason why it's happening.
Today we're going to get on-the-ground reports, gentleman that just came back from McAllen, Texas, that can give us insight to what's happening there, because the human factor is not nice. You're not a nice guy enough to offset the human factor. We're not protecting people. I noticed in the report they said they were seeking asylum, but as we're going to learn about today, what is really the difference between seeking asylum and seeking opportunity and the human cost that's involved? $5,000 to cross the border and be beholden to the cartel. If we continue this, are we not responsible, America and Nice Guy Joe, for funding the cartel? These are some questions that we should be hearing, that should be asked as we look at what's happening at the border, a border that we're not able to look at and call a crisis anymore. That's been dropped. Ask yourself, why are we not allowed to have the media again? Why is the press not allowed to to delve in and ask these questions. Why are kids, for example, getting a free pass and thus being put into danger? Because now we have how many children crossing the border? Listen to this number in this report by ABC.
This morning, the Biden administration is grappling with an intensifying humanitarian and political crisis at the border. As children continue to cross into the country by themselves at a record-breaking pace. Texas state troopers told me they haven't seen anything like it.
Have you ever seen this many unaccompanied minors crossing on their own?
No, I have not.
More than 18,000 unaccompanied minors are currently in government custody. Teens like this one, I met just moments after he crossed the border. He told me he left Guatemala alone, searching for opportunity. Republican senators touring this Border Patrol facility in Donna, Texas, sharing photos and videos showing the severely overcrowded conditions inside. Kids packed inside these pods, sleeping shoulder to shoulder on the floor under foil blankets. Still no media allowed in. The White House downplaying the surge, saying it's nothing new.
What we see from the data is that these surges are cyclical. They're cyclical. They're not the result of one administration's policies or another administration's policies.
People are coming because I'm the nice guy. That's the reason why it's happening.
And this is from CNN.
We're sending back the vast majority of the families that are coming. We're trying to work out now with Mexico their willingness to take more of those families back. But that's what's happening. They're not getting across the border.
They're not getting across the border. A vast majority of families are being sent back. Is that true, Daniel?
Jake, that was not true in February, which is, of course, the last month for which we have a full month's data. According to official statistics, it was 41% of migrants, so not a majority, who came in February as part of family units who were swiftly sent back, expelled under the pandemic-related rule known as Title 42. Now, I'll caution, Jake, we don't have full data for March. It's possible things have changed. And it was true in February that the vast majority of single adults were sent back. It was 79%. And that the majority of all migrants were sent back. At a different point of the press conference, Jake, Biden made a more accurate claim about the overall group of migrants. But for families in particular, for this particular claim, his claim was not true.
I'm the nice guy. That's the reason why it's happening.
We have pulled out the experts to talk about it, not just Michelle with her grandiose, in my own mind, opinions, but we're getting some folks who have really done the research and know what's going on and can come up with some answers. So he is a senior national security fellow with the Center for Immigration Studies, and he's written this book, America's Covert Border War. What is it? What is this book about? And what does Todd Bensman know that we don't? We will find out. Todd, thank you for making time for us.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Are you kidding me? You know, you fit us in. You have all of these interviews and so much stuff that you're doing. Everybody wants to talk about this hot new book, America's Covert Border Wall at War. And yet you're like, oh, yeah, okay, I'll squeeze you in, Michelle. You made my day. Thank you.
Thank you. No, thank you.
Todd, there's a lot happening down at the border. There is positioning, there's problems with Mexico saying, well, you want us to take people, we just can't afford it, pay us. You know, we have issues dealing with COVID, we have human trafficking, we have the problem with cartels that are getting more money and power. You know, we know a lot of this, but at the heart of it, we also have a lot of folks who are caught in the middle, who really believe that there's an open border here and the American dream is waiting for them. They're real life people that matter. Somewhere in the midst of this, we are missing the real battle and the real problems. So you've done some research on this. Educate me. I need it.
Okay. Well, first of all, if you just look at the apprehension numbers and also numbers for what we call getaways, people that were not apprehended but can be reasonably presumed to have gotten through, and look at the historical data and the trend lines, we are definitely in historic territory.
Okay.
So do you want to call that historic territory or a crisis, full-blown crisis?
No, we can't do that anymore. I'm sorry. It's not allowed, apparently. Yeah, it's been crisis. The word crisis apparently has been canceled. So we'll call it what we want here on the program today. What would you call it?
I would call it a full-blown crisis. We had 100,000 migrants cross in a single four-week period in February. And it looks like we're going to have a really banner month of March, probably going to be, you know, somewhere in the 140, 150 range. April will be higher. The trajectory has gone from the day of the inauguration straight up like this, any end in sight. The reason for this, and I just returned from Mexico. It's not my first trip to Mexico.
Okay.
I like to actually interview the immigrants and find out what they're thinking and why they did what they did.
Wonderful. I'm so curious.
Yeah. Well, I'll just give you one anecdote that that describes everything that I experience when I talk to the migrants. I always ask them. I had a group of six Central Americans in the town of Piedras Negras, which is right across from Eagle Pass, Texas. And I said, all of you who decided to come now in your lives to make this big trip now, if you did that because of something that Joe Biden said or did, raise your hand. And all six of them, seven of them just went immediately like this. And I videotaped it. I have that on video. But when you interview them and ask them, you know, why the border now, they'll say, you know, Biden promised that he was going to open it. We made our decision based on what he said during the campaign. Mm-hmm. So there are hurricanes and there are, you know, just sort of gravitational problems that are always there in the rest of the world. Most of the world is poor, much poorer than the United States. And when you ever have that imbalance, you are going to have push and pull toward the place that's easier and nicer and offers better opportunities. But you don't always get in. Under Trump, you could not get in very easily. There was a high risk that you'd be thrown back into Mexico. But under the Biden campaign promises, and then his very first opening, the very first things he did, I never met a migrant that did not have a cell phone that was fully connected to social media and the news, and they could get at their fingertips, who didn't hear what was happening in the United States and making decisions based on it. So they're coming because of that, and they're getting in because of that. And when they get in, they telegraph it back down the line, hey, we're getting in, and those people come. And it's just a self-propelling thing, and that's what we're in. We're in that now. That's a crisis.
And as I said, you know, we can talk the politics, but we are dealing with people, whether they're breaking the law coming into the nation or you have the view set on the other side that, you know, we need to just have open borders and love people. But these very real people are being subject to abuse from the cartels. They're never getting free. You know, they're paying off the cartels for years to come at risk of life and limb of themselves and their family members. They are risking their lives and going across the border, sometimes crossing the Rio Grande. They are coming into the country and then not getting that promise of the American dream that they were hoping for, many of them being sold into as sex slaves in human trafficking, or having to be utilized for drug trafficking and arms trafficking. I mean, we're not protecting them when we're doing it this way. And that's, there it is, that Michelle's opinion had to just come blaring out, but that's my biggest concern. And now we're seeing that a lot of folks aren't being screened well, and here we're in the middle of a pandemic that we're all living in fear and shut down from. And now we're seeing that these migrants are often just put on planes without a proper documentation, where I need to be, you know, screened up and down, pat searched. I have to have my documentation. They're just getting on planes and buses and being bused to differing places around the country. What's up with that story?
Well, there are a couple of categories of immigrants that are being allowed to stay after they illegally enter. Those would be family units, parents with children, and also children are just under the age of 18. Most of them are actually teenagers who cross on their own or separate from their parents. And those people are paroled into the United States now, whereas before they were thrown back to Mexico and told to wait there and wait your turn to apply for asylum or something like that. So those people, when they cross and get in, they are being put aboard. They're very quickly processed. They're given a legal document, a COVID test, and they're filling up buses one after another all day long from California to the tip of Texas, and they're being shipped into the cities of their choice, often to join relatives or friends or people that can help them get situated. They'll probably at some point apply for political asylum. Virtually none of them are actually eligible for asylum. They're mostly economic immigrants. Asylum is for people who are, persecuted by governments or fleeing persecution, not violence, but persecution, like government persecution. Think Vietnamese boat people, who were trying to get away from the re-education camps of communist North Korea, that sort of thing. And the word is passed back. And sometimes you don't even need to have the word passed back. The president of the United States held a press conference just the other day where he told, it was an internationally televised press conference, and he told the entire world that if you're under the age of 18 and you get near our border, we're letting you in. We will not push any of you back. And so when I heard that, I was thinking, well, very soon there'll be a major escalation in underage minors.
That or people start who identify. Can I just say, or people who identify as underage minors, because
I'll put that in quotation marks, because very often they don't show up with proof of age, and they just say, they all know that if you say you're 17, you get in, but if you say you're 18, you don't get in. So they're all under 18, if you know what I mean. And I had a Border Patrol agent talking to me the other day. He was saying that he ran across a guy that looked like he was 25, and he was going to bring him back to the bridge and return him. And the guy said, "I'm 17. And the Border Patrol said, "No, you're not. Prove it." And the guy said, "No, I'm 17. You prove I'm not." Mm-hmm. And he had to just let him into the United States.
Well, of course, I would do the same. I mean, I'm not going to lie. If that were, I wouldn't lie. That's true. And I'd be, but I can relate to their dilemma. They've come this far, and all you have to do is say, no, I'm 17. It's an absolute mess. And whether you want people, you think we can be here as welcoming open arms, and I believe in immigration. I think it's wonderful for our nation. I think the diversity is fabulous. I think people, particularly from Latin America, bring a work ethic and a faith that is rich to our nation. But we need to protect them as well as our nation, and do it in a logical, reasonable, organized way. My goodness, the cartels are more organized and know more of how to get people across a border than we do. But there's a deeper story that I wanted to get to that you cover in your book, America's Covert Border War. It's the untold story of the nation's battle to prevent jihadist infiltration. I mean, how real is that? We haven't heard a lot about jihadis and ISIS and all of this for, I don't know, it's been 4 or 5 years, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, it's a very taboo subject, which is why I was attracted to it. It's one of those topics that if you say it out loud that's happening, then you're almost immediately scored as some kind of a nativist, racist, or that you're a fearmonger or something. But what the book does is it actually establishes that the U.S. Homeland Security establishment or enterprise, as a DHS and all of the agencies, since 9/11 have actually fielded real programs, counterterrorism programs, to deal with the threat of terrorist infiltration from countries of national security concern in the Middle East, North Africa, South Asia, think Afghanistan, Pakistan, because there actually is a flow of thousands of migrants from those very countries right through the same routes to the southern border. And they show up at the southern border.
And they're all 17.
Yeah, well, that's a separate issue. But right now, if they say they're 17, they're probably turnstiled right in. But they show up without any identification or anything like that. They just say, my name is Mickey Mouse, and I apply for asylum. And, you know, there's an apparatus that's in place to try to figure out who they are and what the threat is of that issue. And what I found in the research is that over the years, that apparatus that's in place, not just along the actual physical land border, but throughout South America, we have personnel stationed all over for 15 years dealing with this problem that the American public has never known about. That's why I say covert, have actually stopped terrorist travelers throughout Latin America who are on their way to the US border, and they deport them there. So you never even hear about it. Also, you have quite a few terrorist suspects who hit the southern border and are discovered and apprehended and dealt with through these programs that I outline in the book. So the book is really not about what Todd Benzman thinks or Donald Trump or any of those people. It's what the professional national security analysts and officers think about this and how they do their jobs and what programs are out there. Just kind of an idea, a way to provide a neutral, finally a neutral, apolitical, factual guide out there about this problem, that there is a thing out there. And every time it gets brought up, everybody gets in a big fight about it. You know, you'll have the people on the left will scream and holler at whoever's saying it that you're lying and a fearmonger trying to suppress Hispanic immigrants by saying that there are jihadists among them. And then you have the people on the right who very often over-exaggerate the threat, but the threat's actually there somewhere in between. Yeah. And the book lays it out.
And I think on the right as well, well-meaning people can have a resentment against all immigration. We kind of throw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak, when dealing with immigration and thinking, you know, we just got to shut our borders. That build a wall means shut our borders down and this is just for us. But it's really not that at all. It is really about protecting everyone. And I appreciate you, Todd, I appreciate that your book is apolitical. Unfortunately, sometimes we are not hearing the very statistics and reports that people like you are giving because of the things that you mentioned, because, we don't want to seem racist. And you don't believe me? Think about this. Have you ever, Todd, I'll ask you this, and as you're listening, think about this. Answer this question in your head. Have you ever been on social media and someone says something and you were going to post something and you go, no, that's going to open up a can of worms? I mean, isn't that kind of how we're living? Have you ever done that?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a chilling effect out there. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, I'll tell you this about the book, America's Covert Border War, that if people who claim that this is not a real threat, that these aren't real programs, that the government doesn't really have professional staff all over Latin America working on this problem, denialists were to actually read the book, they would find that democratic administrations were very involved in this, that they supported what was happening. Jay Johnson most recently was a huge proponent of programs to stop jihadist infiltration at the border. I have memorandum from him. I have interviewed him. He was putting forth major programs at DHS to improve what we're doing down there to stop jihadist infiltration over the border. He was a Democratic appointee. Just a week and a half ago, the new DHS secretary, Alejandro Mayorkas, was sitting in front of a panel, Homeland Security Committee, and he was asked, what about terrorists crossing the border? And he said, we have terrorist suspects who are on the watch list cross the border this year, last year, and the year before, and so forth and so on, he said. And we have programs in place to deal with that. Architecture is what he said. And we have multi-layered defenses to deal with that infiltration problem. And it has worked. That's a Democratic nominee of Joe Biden saying, acknowledging that this is, that it's real, just like Donald Trump said. So if, when you have Alejandro Mayorkas and Donald Trump saying the same thing, you have a neutral, apolitical problem, and Jay Johnson too, to deal with. And I would just urge people on both sides to read the book, okay, if you don't believe it.
Can you give us some insight? And there's no way we could get into all of the tasty tidbits that are in your book and all of the information. But you talk about this covert war, meaning that, yeah, most of us don't know about it. We're caught out here with the silly debate that's going on. We're not really hearing some of what's really happening, the people who are fighting this battle. What are some of the headlines that we're not hearing?
Well, for example, last week, I think it was the week before last, the House Minority Leader, Kevin McCarthy, led a delegation to New Mexico, to the border. And while he was there, there were Border Patrol agents who told them that they had just caught three Yemenis crossing the border who were on the terror watch list. He had never heard that this kind of thing was happening. He was surprised. He held a press conference and he talked about that. And of course, everybody jumped down his throat about it. There were stories in the Washington Post. He's a liar. It's fear-mongering again. But the truth is that there were three Yemenis who crossed the border in New Mexico who are on a terror watch list. And it's just like Alejandro Mayorkas said, they are not the only ones that get caught who are on the terror watch list at the border. We have had, the book lays out a long succession of people who had derogatory terrorism intelligence associated with them from the very beginning of these programs after 9/11. For example, one of them, and one of the earliest ones, examples in the book, happened in 2002, a few months after 9/11. And it was an Al-Qaeda Afghan who was caught in Mexico. His name was Fida Ahmed. And he was apprehended by the Mexicans and with another jihadist who had been smuggled there by a jihadist-linked smuggling organization. And that guy, Fida Ahmed, ended up in Guantanamo Bay as an enemy, labeled as an enemy combatant. On his way to the United States, and every single thing that he said was a lie. He was covering up what he was up to. That was one of the earliest ones. And the book is filled with anecdotes just like that all the way through.
I'm really blown away. Your research is astounding. And the information, Todd, is something that we all really need to be made aware of. Not just the information that we can get from someone in social media, which is great. You know, share that information. You know stuff, share it. You know, you're going to share My Michelle Live. You're going to share this and say, hey, guys, look, listen to this interview. That's great. But when you can go back to the source, research it a bit yourself, look at some of the work like you've done, this really gives some oomph to what's happening. And it goes beyond the headlines that at this point are just seeming like a lot of fluff. I'm so glad people like you are cutting to the heart of it, because there are lives and real people on the line. Todd Bensman has been our guest. His book is America's Covert Border War. You can click on the link right there at My Michelle Live and get your own copy. And Todd, this has been a blast. I hope you'll join us again.
Sure. Thank you very much for having me.
She may just be the friendliest voice you hear all day. Well, next to mine, of course.
Turn that scraggly weed pit into a garden of love, where she plants her nose and kisses.
Real Bearded Men at MyMichelleLive.com.
And I'm feeling good.
This is Michelle Mendoza, and there is one thing that has me feeling really, really good and looking better than maybe ever before. We can get you the best deals on Calitrin, and you can help us spread the God story by going to My Michelle Live, clicking on the Calitrin link, and using promo code My Michelle Live.
She's so bubbly, every day you're at risk from drowning in a happy ocean of foam. But hey, what a fun way to go. It's Off the Wall Commentary. Let's take it off the wall.
For just a moment, we're going to be talking about this just like regular folk do, with someone who is a little cooler than just your regular folk and friend of My Michelle Live, Mark Griswold. Welcome.
Hey, good to be here. I'm not sure I'm cooler than anybody else, but hey, I'll take it.
We're taking on immigration today, and I wanted to get your thoughts. You wrote something on your Political Bistro page, and I thought you could share some of your insight.
Yeah, it's definitely a problem, and, you know, we could get into the whole political thing of whether Biden being lenient on it is part of the problem or not, but I'm going to soar past that. Don't want to get in the weeds there. But we definitely, I think everybody agrees, we have a problem. And, you know, I've got some solutions to fix that, and they're Christian-based. And we need to, you know, I've heard a lot of people say, oh, well, you know, Jesus would be for open borders. And, you know, we have a right to, or we have an obligation as Christians to take people in. And there's all sorts of things in the Bible about the Good Samaritan taking people in and, you know, take in a stranger and things like that. Well, what a lot of people on the left like to think is that when God talks about these mandates for us Christians, that apparently that's government as well mandating that. But for me, the Bible is a personal thing, right? God is speaking directly to each of us as an individual. So absolutely, yes, we have an obligation to take in strangers, including people from you know, places like Mexico or a lot of other countries that aren't doing as well as we are. But again, it's a personal obligation. And a quick story, when I was about 5 years old, my family took in a family from Iran. You know, they had the coup there, they overthrew the Shah and things went really bad, the Ayatollah and all that. So this family, they were dissidents and they were basically running for their lives. And they came, you know, they first went to Germany and then they eventually made it to America, where our church took them in along with a lot of other people from Iran, you know, and placed them with different families in our church. And they stayed with us in our home for, boy, a few months, I think. And then we helped them get on their feet, you know, the church as a whole, and find an apartment and eventually get a job and whatnot. And I'm all for that. In fact, I'd say I'm for open borders. You know, anybody should be able to come here who wants to. But the problem is right now we have these open borders combined with, oh, come across and we're going to give you all this free stuff and we're going to sign you up to vote and here's your welfare check and we're going to kick out the foster school or foster family kids. I don't know if you heard about that in Renton, Washington, a family that's been taking care of foster kids for like 20 years all of a sudden got a notice from the government, and they said, well, no, we need your house now, because I guess they rent their house or they get the house as part of a program. And they said, well, we're going to be putting illegal immigrant kids in the house now instead of your foster kids. So it's not government, it's God. And we have a choice when it comes to God. It's not a, you know, he has our laws, but we have a choice whether to follow them or not. Whereas, you know, government, you don't follow laws, you get thrown in jail. I mean, certainly if you don't follow God's laws, you get thrown in eternal jail. But it's a different kind of thing. God, I feel, gives us more of a choice than government. So
yeah,
that's what I got.
I hear you. There's also the problem with open borders. We think that we're being generous, but the many people who have died, the folks who are supporting and financing, we're essentially supporting and financing the cartel because we're encouraging people to pay $5,000, $3,500 on average to cartel members to get themselves across. We are funding human trafficking and the plight and the misery because we're just letting people in willy-nilly. I'm with you. Open borders are great. We thrive with immigration and with diversity, but we are not doing it in a smart way. And as we kept playing the soundbite, Joe Biden says, well, they're coming because I'm a good guy. I'm going to say this right now, and then I'll give you the final word. I'm not about a good guy. I don't care if you're a good guy. I want you to be a good president. I want you to be a good leader. Any more than I go to the doctor, what doctor are you going to pick, Mark, when you need a surgery? The good guy with the bedside manner or the guy that you know knows his stuff and he's going to save your life and do what's best for you? It's a thought, and I'd like your final word.
Right. It's like, you know, is the good parent the one who continues to give their kid candy knowing that he's going to make them sick, or says, you know what, no, you don't get candy right now. You need to eat your vegetables. And yeah, the open border, it can be open. And I think our immigration system is flawed. It needs to be a lot more streamlined so that if you do want to come here and you're not a criminal and you're not just going to live off the system, they say, hey, great. You know, you think about 120 years ago when, you know, my grandparents came here from Greece. My grandfather was in a concentration camp in Turkey, got out of the concentration camp, came to America with essentially nothing, and, you know, went through school, went through college, and became a superior court judge in King County. He made it on his own. Certainly, he had help from friends and family. But again, it's got to be a personal thing. We should take people in. We should help them get on their feet. But they have to want to contribute to this country, and we can't just be handing them out, and we certainly can't have the situation at the border with human trafficking and things like that, because that's just not helping anyone.
Well, I want to thank you for weighing in today and giving us an everyday guy look at some of the concerns that the rest of us are having as we watch what's taking place along the border. You can find Mark at thepoliticalbistro.com. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, Michelle.
So glad to have with us a gentleman who, you know, this isn't just academics here. We're not going to give you today just a little information based on how we feel about immigration and open borders and what's happening down there. This is an inside view, and we're giving you our inside man. He is the author of Agent Under Fire, and if you are watching this, and you can watch it rebroadcasted at MyMichelleLive.com, you'll see a picture of his book and you'll get links to purchase this book. It is called Agent Under Fire. We'll talk more about the book, but first, let's welcome Victor Avila. He is a retired ICE supervisory special agent. He has just returned from the border, so you're going to get a firsthand look into what's going on down there. What does it look like without the filter of somebody's la-di-da opinion or the leaning of a newspaper or you know what, social media, whatever it is. So, Victor, it's good to connect with you again. It's so great that you make time for us. Thank you, man. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Michelle, for having me and inviting me, because it's so important to continue to get this information out. And I just returned from a 2-day tour down there in the McAllen, Texas area, where the big processing center is, the Donna in Donna, Texas, that you've seen on the news. That luckily now we're seeing pictures from within the facility. I want to concentrate a lot on what's happening outside of those facilities. We know that the conditions and the overcrowding of the unaccompanied minors, and that's important, but I really want to focus beyond the detention centers and really what's affecting the whole system here that is just, it's beyond a crisis, it's a disaster. In my almost 20 years of public service and law enforcement career, I have never seen anything quite like this, especially when it comes to our Border Patrol agents and the morale, if there's any right now, is tremendously very, very, very sad to see, and actually very, very telling of what instructions they've received from this administration of what they can and cannot do. And that's very important moving forward.
Before we get into, and I want to welcome those who are just now streaming with us as we talk with Victor Avila. He is a retired ICE supervisory special agent. He's the author of Agent Under Fire, just returning from the border, and we're getting an inside look into what's really happening. Victor, before we get into some of what you've seen and painting that picture for us, I'm interested in what's the real difference? It's only been a few months, you know, in the change of administration. Isn't it the same problem, different ruler, so to speak?
No, it's not. Even though we've seen this before and we've seen other surges like this and crisis, and we saw it in 2019 under the Biden under the Trump administration. But this is completely different. This is beyond just with the sheer numbers of individuals that are coming in. Nothing like this. The camps that are continuing to grow and built, which is, I disagree with expanding this and moving people into military bases and frankly allowing them just to come into our country. And I'll talk about that and what I witnessed. And so no, it's not the same. And it makes a huge difference because the example under the Trump administration, we saw that it happened and then there were steps taken to stop it. And we saw it stop because there was a great conversation and negotiation with Mexico and Central America, but mostly with Mexico. President Trump was able to talk to them and say, listen, we need your help down there. For you to start enforcing your southern border before these people make it through your country, because Mexico is also suffering from this in many, many ways when it comes to the cartels and a lot of these individuals in their country. They also are experiencing these huge changes. And so that's one of the major things that's changed, is that the new administration has lost that diplomatic contact. Not that they don't talk to them. I'm talking about the contact of whether they're going to help us deal with this influx of these caravanners that are continuing to come in, and they will continue to come in until we seal the border and really allow our Border Patrol agents to enforce immigration law. The first thing I have to tell you is that's the first thing that I noticed down there. We are not enforcing anything down at the border right now. It is so disheartening. I came back last night and with a lot of emotions, anger, sadness, even embarrassment of what I saw and what our country is doing down there. It doesn't make any sense to me. It's upside down. It's backwards. There's no enforcement of any law whatsoever beyond immigration law. There's a lot of other activities happening on down at the border, and the Constitution is completely being ignored. And I want our Border Patrol agents to continue to, they swore to take an oath and they want to enforce those laws. They want to work the border and continue to secure the border, but they're not being allowed to do that by the Biden administration through the Secretary of Homeland Security, which is a shame.
The conditions for people, we heard so much in the past about, excuse me, kids being separated from their parents, from kids being put in these detention chambers, and the administration was likened to a Hitler-esque, you know, but things really haven't changed. And maybe that's because, unfortunately, you know, we're dealing with what is now not allowed to be called a crisis, But it is. It's a crisis down there. Now, Victor, it's hard for people who aren't there, you know, so far removed from, like most of us are in the United States, to understand the sheer numbers and what you do with people. You don't know who they are. They're not documented. They may not have documentation. How do you know that a child belongs to an individual, or if it's not just a ruse and the child's going to be trafficked? There's so many questions, and we just have this, I don't know if we just have this pie in the sky idea that we're a big-hearted country and we're helping people who just want a better life, but what's happening down there, just from the start, and we'll get to some of the other issues, is not such a good life.
It really is not, and you have to understand the individuals that are coming in, and rightly so, the way you stated it, you're right on. This is not about the United States not being a humanitarian country or not being compassionate with other countries and these individuals. This is now about the protection of our sovereignty and the enforcement of our borders and how important that is, because we're going to continue, and I'm going to stress this throughout this interview, of the consequences that we're going to face in our country, in Indiana, in St. Louis, in Chicago, in Denver, in California, in New Jersey. Everywhere in every inch and corner of our country, you will see the consequences, and those consequences are not good ones, because of the sheer numbers of people coming in. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of people, unaccompanied minors, yes, young adults, a lot of them in the 16, 17 year old category, many of them in the 20, 21, 22 year olds that, by the way, are committing fraud by claiming to be 17-year-olds. We have that part going on. And the Border Patrol has no idea and no ability to check a birth certificate or verify their identity, because the consulates from these countries have decided not to show up. Now, in my experience, and I've worked on the border many times, and I've worked with consulates a lot, and you know, if something happens to one of their citizens, they're the first ones to be there to assist. Where are they right now? Why aren't the consulates from El Salvador and Honduras and in Guatemala, why aren't they there providing information to the Border Patrol agents of who these individuals are? Because we're having to take their word for it. We're having to take the word of a 21-year-old that claims that he's 17, his word for it, and treat him as an unaccompanied minor, just like we would treat a six-year-old, and allow him in this country. These individuals, many of them, not all, many of them, have ties to the cartels, have ties to gang members. In the few instances that our agents have been able to interview them, some have claimed that allegiance to gang membership from their countries. And all of a sudden, we're allowing them to come into the country. Some, by the way, and many of them, are not even going into the detention centers, Michelle. I witnessed day before yesterday, a group of 400 plus individuals, which I was down there with the Border Patrol agent. This is in McAllen, Texas, by the river. It's, by the way, it's about 2 miles inland from the river. This is where you see, if you've seen pictures of people walking on these roads, this is where they walk towards the Border Patrol agents. The Border Patrol agents are not down at the levee by the water patrolling anymore. They haven't for weeks. They tell me firsthand, we are just waiting for them to come up to us and turn themselves in. These are the ones that want to turn themselves in. And when they do, this group that was down there, when I was there, I was just even assuming that they were going to be transported to the Donna facility or to other facilities in McAllen or be transferred out. But no, they were completely released to the street. No DNA testing, no NTA, notice to appear by Border Patrol, which is a notice that's given to them to appear before a court date, in whenever that court date becomes available. Not even that. They are taken by the bus station in McAllen, Texas, and there are other charities out there that are taking them, giving them toiletries, something to eat, and then they wait for money for either a bus fare or airfare to their final destination. There is a big tent set up across the bus station in McAllen, Texas, where there is COVID testing going on. And they're testing the women and children that are coming in, the ones that are going to the bus station and to these charities. And so they do test them. And so my question to the Border Patrol agent and the guard that was there, I said, what happens when the adult tests positive and the child tests negative? They didn't have the answer, because they said if they test positive, they're then being placed in hotels that you and I are paying for. As you know, the Biden administration sent $86 million to house these individuals in hotels, most of them overnight, when they cannot or they haven't been able to get money for their fare. They put them up in a hotel at least for one or two nights until they get that money from someone, either their family member. A lot of times it's not their family anymore. It's other NGOs that are, I believe, aiding and abetting this by providing them with the money. And then if they test positive, are they going to separate the child from the mother to quarantine? They weren't able to answer that question. What about tearing these families apart? Are you going to quarantine the child with the mother, even though one of them is positive and one of them is negative? There's a mass confusion and different practices happening around different sectors around the border.
So there's no continuity because it's kind of a free-for-all. But that's why you have borders, so that you can safely transport people without funding cartels and document people so they're not lost to human trafficking, so they're not entering the country. I mean, we can't even sit at a table with more than six people in most of the United States, but we can have people that, you know, some of those 400 that were just released, no COVID testing there. And the thing that we don't wrap our heads around is in our quest for compassion, which in my opinion turns to cruelty, is that if I were to drive my car with kids in the back and I'm drunk and I get pulled over, I'm being taken in, I'm being separated from my children. If I'm with my children and I commit armed robbery, they're going to arrest me and I'm going to be separated from my children. Now, while the people coming into the country, they're coming in illegally. I understand the argument that people aren't illegal. No, but their actions can be. And their actions can result in those children, those same children. You know, this is a passion of mine, Victor, and as you watch and listen, are oftentimes lost to human trafficking. We cannot protect them if we don't give a reasonable way to enter our country. I am not against immigration. I think it's one of the best things in the world for our nation, that diversity. But we have to protect people, and it just sounds like it's going, it's nuts down there. What are some of the other observations that we're not hearing in the news?
Well, I'll tell you, I saw a bus being offloaded there by the bus station, and it was, these are the ones that do not go to the processing centers. These are strictly from the border, from the levee, from the river, like whatever name you provide, whatever information you provide, we're taking their word for it, and then bus to the bus station. And you just see adult, adult, child. I mean, it's just children and adults. You don't know. We didn't DNA test these. We don't know if these children belong to these adults. We don't know if there's their parent, their aunt, or no relationship at all. And so the human trafficking and the child trafficking aspect of this is alive and real. And they're headed to a town near you. And so that's what's going to happen here. And the broader picture is when this turns into hundreds of thousands to possibly millions of people, what are we expecting them to do? The sustainability of these individuals when they hit your town, are we expected for the 13 or 16 year old to all of a sudden come into the high school and assimilate? A lot of these individuals, this is what I heard from the Border Patrol agents, are illiterate. They cannot read and write in Spanish. They can't read and write Spanish. Are we going to expect them to learn English immediately? They have other health conditions. Forget COVID. They have tuberculosis. They have lice. They have, they've never been vaccinated for the measles, never been any of those conditions that are requirements for U.S. citizens in our school system to attend school. It is a mess. And we're going to see that the absorbing of those individuals into these communities, and those issues will arise because we're going to have education issues. We're going to have healthcare issues. We're going to have security issues. A lot of these individuals will commit crimes, unfortunately, in our communities. And a lot of them have ties to the cartels. A lot of these individuals are coming in with a debt owed to the cartels and kind of an indentured
servitude.
Can we
stop there for just a moment? Because that's an important one. Yeah, there are, when you have open borders, even when you have regular, come in through regular legal means, you have crime. You know, there, it comes with people. By and large, folks that are immigrating want to work hard, want to contribute, want to you know, to take care of their families. And that's kind of that's an indicative characteristic of a lot of Latino families. So there's some good aspects. But this is what we need to also consider, is that these people, you know, there's the crime element. Of course, there are, but there's also this I want to contribute, I want to work hard element. Great. But the system that we have set up by proxy, because we're not doing anything, requires these folks, as you're saying, to be beholden to cartels. They're owed money. And if you can't wrap your head around it, think of a mob. You know, you have the mob, you have folks who own you, and you've got to make payments. They can own you for life. And if you don't, you're dead or your family's dead. You can be asked at any time to transport drugs because you're owned by them. So there's a lot of unforeseen problems that I'd like for you to address, as you've seen this firsthand.
Absolutely. I've already seen this in my career, and it's only going to be expanded with what's going on right now. A lot of these teenagers, a lot of the 16, 17 year olds have been recruited by the cartels when they were a lot much younger. They've already worked for them. They know that these individuals will be allowed in as an unaccompanied minor, and they will push the methamphetamine and the fentanyl in the gangs in Chicago. Now they have another cartel member there. These individuals are not going to go and integrate and assimilate to the high school or to the junior high school of their town and become great members of society. Some are, most are not. And even the ones that want to are going to experience a lot of challenges that I just mentioned when it comes to language barriers and other issues. But there's the aspect of the United States not enforcing the laws. And I'll give you an example. My whole tour down there for the 2 days, I did not hear the word asylum, not once. These individuals do not qualify for asylum. They do not. The asylum criteria under our laws are being ignored 100% by the Biden administration. In order to qualify for asylum, you have to have been persecuted by your government because of your race, your religion, your nationality, or your affiliation to any political organization. And the truth is, these individuals, you interview them down there and they tell you, no, I'm coming because I want to work. It has nothing to do with that. Or they'll say, well, it's very dangerous in my country. Well, you know what? It's very dangerous in the United States as well. Go to Chicago, go to Detroit, go to Maryland, go to St. Louis. There's a lot of places that are very dangerous in our city as well. We have crime. We don't need more. Well, they killed the cartel killed my brother, killed my husband, killed my father. And these are horrific, horrific conditions that these individuals are dealing with in their home countries. But why is the United States taking the burden and placing the burden on ourselves to take care of all these individuals? We need to place the burden on those governments to take care of their own citizens.
Ooh, there's some good stuff in there. And something along those lines, Victor. Yes, the cartel killed your family members. The cartel are running things. They're still running your life because they're the very people that you have to go to. You may have heard the story. Everyone has the wristbands in order to cross. I mean, they have an organized system. How is it that cartels are so much better at having an organized system of getting people across? They can keep track of these people for the rest of their flipping lives and hold them accountable and have them beholden to them. They know how to track them. They know how to find them. And we have a government that can't do that to protect them.
they are bringing not only the bracelets, they're writing phone numbers on their forearms. And that phone number is supposed to be supposedly to a family member, to some individual that's going to answer the phone and take this person. And we're going to release them to that person. We don't know who that person is. We don't know if that person is a trafficker themselves, is part of the cartel, is going to traffic these children and these women. It is just a, like I tell you, I can't, sometimes I'm lost for words and the description of the condition and what we're going to see, because this has no end in sight. Our Border Patrol agents are on edge. I had never seen them. I've worked with them all my career. I'm like, listen, guys, they can't talk to the media. They can't do what they want to do with their job.
Are they being curtailed? Are they being told that they can't speak to the media? Are there things that it seems like we're trying to hide for political reasons or to make our leaders, whoever they may be, and I'm not trying to pick on the Biden administration, whoever happens to be in power, to make them look good? Is that
absolutely. Absolutely. I'm telling you, they're not making the Border Patrol agents look good. I agree with Senator Lindsey Graham that the first thing that Biden administration needs to do is apologize to the Border Patrol agents. They are overwhelmed. Forget the work. They are overworked and overwhelmed. But they're not used. They don't know how to do it. This is not what they signed up to do. They're caretakers. I call them medical assistants, MAs, because that's what they're doing. They're processing these people and just to kind of ushering them. And when I was down there, I'm like, what is going on here? What is this complacency that I felt that from the United States that where is the enforcement of where's the protection of our sovereignty? Where's the enforcement of our border, of our existing laws? I'm not asking for any laws to be invented here. I'm not even asking for new legislation. It'd be good to see some new one that addressed what's happening specifically, but we don't have to do that. All we have to do is allow Border Patrol and, by the way, ICE as well, ICE to enforce the in the interior of our country, our immigration laws. Simple as that. We got individuals.
We saw recently, just this last week, the story of a 4-year-old that died in the Rio Grande. A mother and the other child survived, but were found unconscious and resuscitated there on an island. But the 4-year-old was gone.
9-year-old. It was a 9-year-old.
9-year-old. Oh, okay. Yeah. So there it is in the press again. You know, if the younger, yeah, the more it pulls on your heartstrings. But nonetheless, the sorrow of that family having to go through that kind of terror, the trip, wondering what's going to happen next. But some of that falls on the shoulders of a government that just says, "We come on in," you know, and doesn't provide a secure border and a safe way to enter into the nation.
Well, the safe way and the way to seek asylum is through a port of entry, not through the river. So that's exactly already breaking the law to begin with. So you mentioned that one. While I was there, there was a body that flowed up that morning, another death, another drowning of an adult. And yesterday I just saw a DPS trooper rescued a 6-month-old baby that had been thrown in the river. This is what we're going to continue to see. These are the conditions down there. We're going to continue to see deaths, drownings. That's why they call it a Rio Bravo in Spanish, meaning the aggressive river, because even though some of these areas might be shallow water, they have these rip currents that'll just bring you down and drown you, whether you're a good swimmer or not. And the power has gone to the cartels with the money. They're making millions of dollars a day. They're charging these people $3,000 to $4,000 to cross. Plus, get this, an additional $300 to $400 just to get on the raft, and be taken over to the U.S. side.
Sorry, you can just drown. Oops, but we'll keep your $3,000, which will not only fund the cartels, but think about this as well. How much of a problem here we are. I am broadcasting from the northwest corner of the United States, where homelessness and drug addiction is horrific and has risen exponentially over the last couple of years, all funded by the drugs that can come freely into our country, and we're empowering. I mean, we might as well just be writing a check to the cartel to invade us, and we
great
have
word,
all these unforeseen problems.
Because Michelle, the by the way, let me make this clear: the smuggling and the trafficking hasn't stopped. By the way. That continues. And I talked to the agents down there on the line. They're like, by the way, they're still capturing we still have smugglers smuggling people away. These are not the individuals that are turning themselves in. Not everyone is turning themselves in. We have hundreds of thousands of people coming in aside from the ones that are turning themselves in that do not want to be detected. And guess what? Sex offenders, convicted felons that have been prior deports that are trying to come back in, criminals from other countries. We got bad people that are trying to come in that do not want to be detected. They're not going to turn themselves into Border Patrol and seek asylum. These guys are still being trafficked. I submitted a video last week of a tractor trailer near San Antonio, Texas, where they're offloading dozens and dozens. And all you see is, you know, 20, 25 year old males jumping out of the back of a tractor trailer being offloaded. What? In a smuggling venture. That still continues. Some of these smuggling ventures, the cartels are saying, okay, well, you're going to get, you know, you're going to pay to get smuggled. Now, part of that smuggling is you're going to split 200 pounds of methamphetamine amongst you, or fentanyl. And that's part of the deal in order for you to cross, because the cartels rule what you want to do. They you cannot come from Haiti, Cuba, Middle East, China, Brazil. This is where people are in Mexico. Don't think it's just Mexicans and Central American. We have special interest aliens from Bangladesh, Iran, Syria, Yemen, Somalia, in Mexico, that we have no idea what their intentions are when they come into the US. These are people that have ties to terrorism. And we can't ignore the national security issue that we face with that as well. They know that our Border Patrol agents are overwhelmed taking care of the ones that are turning themselves in, which is plenty of them. But guess what? The border is left open. Of course, we have no more wall that's wide open, that we didn't finish that. So it is a free-for-all, to say the least. And now the Biden administration, I think, is unable, not knowing to know what to do, either diplomatically or on the ground. And I think it's going to take drastic measures to stop this.
Oh, indeed. So Mexico, what is happening with the whole Mexican government and saying, oh, we can't, you know, process these people. We can't, you know, can you just give us a little insight into what is happening with Mexico, their expectations, and them wanting money for us to return people, you know, the very people who crossed through their borders? It's kind of mind-boggling. I don't get it.
It's very mind-boggling. Right now, we have no leadership to deal with Mexico and say, listen, if you don't do your part, we're gonna sanction you. We're not going to send you money. We're going to increase the tariffs because we know trade is very important for Mexico. This is what President Trump did. And we saw the reaction from President López Obrador from Mexico. And but they have no threat from anyone other than the cartels. The cartels rule and control Mexico, including the politicians, including the president, including everyone. They are the ones that dictate what happens. And so unless we do something drastic, it's not going to change.
Okay. I want to talk a little bit about your book, Agent Under Fire, the impetus behind it, and why it's important for anyone who's listening today to pick up a copy.
This book that I wrote because the original reason and the main reason why I wrote this book is in 2011, Special Agent Jaime Zapata and I were ambushed in Mexico while we were on assignment over there by the Zetas cartel. And Agent Zapata tragically lost his life in the line of duty in Mexico. A lot of people don't know that. It's been 10 years that happened. I was shot 3 times and miraculously survived that ambush. And so that's the main part of the book, is the story. But I share with the reader who I am, my law enforcement career, and what I did with my specialty, which is human trafficking. I'm a subject matter expert in that, and the drug trafficking and everything else that I investigated. And then I go into detail about my assignment in Mexico and, of course, the shooting, and really let people know what happened, the aftermath of the shooting, because I think it's important people to know, first of all, that we have agents serving abroad all over the world, protecting our homeland. And I think it's important in Jaime Zapata's memory to inform people that he paid the ultimate sacrifice. And then the second part of the book is what you and I have been talking about today. People tell me, did you write this yesterday? It almost seems like I did. But I've been dealing with these issues of child trafficking, human trafficking, drug trafficking, and everything that's happening at our southern border for many, many years now. And the system needs to be overhauled. I don't like the word immigration reform. I don't like that because I think it's used too much politically. I think we need to, there's aspects of our immigration system that work and obviously some that don't, but it's the illegal immigration that really needs to be under control and really needs to be stopped. And I give solutions, real solutions based on my experience on how do we deal with the asylum cases, with sanctuary cities, with DACA, with the wall, all these issues that you're going to get a perspective from someone that's worked on the border and been there and done that.
Yeah, I want to talk about those solutions as we wrap things up, but I want to linger on your book because, first of all, excuse me, I want to say thank you to the folks. You're not like as though you're in the military where you've been drafted, you have this term of service. Our border agents choose their jobs. You chose to do what you did. You chose, and it is to work, especially specializing with human trafficking. That's the most, to me, one of the most gut-wrenching topics. I mean, that is a human, a beautiful human life created by God, who has been reduced to objectivity, to just being an object, to torture, to absolute hopelessness. Yeah. That and to watch that day in and day out, but to be part of the solution, I have to thank you. First question concerning your experiences, what was it that got you through that? I mean, shot three times. What was going through your head? You had to have thought, this is it. You had to have been like, okay, God, I'm going to be seeing you soon. I mean, I want to hear about that.
The moment of the shooting was, you know, we were shot at over 100 rounds with AK-47s and handguns and all types of rifles and stuff. And so, believe it or not, a lot of it was disbelief, as an agent and been trained, and a lot of it is disbelief. You just, you go through a few seconds of it, even thinking you can't believe that that has actually happened. And being in Mexico, even as a Hispanic American from my parents being from Mexico and me being a first generation, I felt like such an outsider. I felt like, as a proud American that I am, felt so alone in Mexico, and because of the corruption and everything that's going on there. And then being attacked in that way, it was surreal. It was the word. I couldn't believe that this was actually happening to us. You know, where they're combating these traffickers of all types, arms trafficking, human trafficking, you mentioned drugs, to secure the homeland. And, you know, these cartels just goes to show that they don't have, they don't care about any kind of life like that, or they decided that they didn't care about Americans either. Usually the cartels had respected U.S. law enforcement for many years. The last agent to be killed in the line of duty in Mexico was Enrique Camarena from DEA. And so there was like an underlying rule saying you don't mess with U.S. law enforcement, but the Zetas cartel, as ruthless as they are, they didn't care that day. And so it kind of opened the door and kind of shifted to what Mexico has become now and dealing with the humans as products. You're absolutely right. I've seen the horrific conditions that they treat women and children, and they put them in there in these situations that, frankly, you know, I could never get them out of my head. And the images and videos and stuff that I've seen with the child pornography and all the other stuff that these guys are involved with, it is something that is real, that it continues to happen. And the way our situation at the border is right now does not help that at all. As a matter of fact, it's only encouraging it. And it's only helping boost more of it. And so some of the solutions I have, you mentioned is one of the biggest ones, I think, is to designate some of these biggest cartels as foreign terrorist organizations. I think it would change the rules. It would allow the Department of Defense resources to come in and really treat them like ISIS, designate them just like ISIS, just like the Taliban, just like Al-Qaeda. Amen. And let's see what we can do, because I think that's what they are. They have terrorized not only just the country of Mexico, but by the way, these cartels are present everywhere in our country. A lot of the spike of violence that you see in these cities and shootings in Chicago, a lot of it is attributed to the cartels because it's the poison that they continue to push in here. And they have control because they want that money. They want that power, not only in Mexico, but in 40 countries around the world. These are powerful organizations. They are not street gangs. They are not drug gangs. They're involved in the avocado trade, in the fuel trade, in the illicit obtaining of petroleum and gasoline. These guys are something else, highly, highly sophisticated, highly weaponized, highly organized. You see, just go online and check out Cartel Jalisco New Generation and see the weaponry that they have, the armored vehicles, the military style high training that they have and the weapons and the shootings that they continue to have in broad daylight in Mexico. You would think you're in Iraq, but you're actually in Mexico, which is right next door to us, not 6,000 miles away. And that thing, that's what I believe is the imminent threat to our country, that if we don't seal the border, we're going to see those cartels. They've already spilled over into our country. I don't want to see the violence increase the way it is in Mexico and the individuals continue to have direct access to our country.
Any other thoughts on some of the solutions? As we can hear about the problems. Those problems, you know, that we hear it motivates us, but we don't know what to do with it. So all it becomes is a really interesting program that people got to listen to. But if we continue to share solutions from someone who has been there right on the front lines, that starts to germinate in us, Victor. And I think just everyday people, we are a country of, by, and for we the people. We start sharing our ideas. We start saying, hey, I heard on My Michelle Live, Victor talk about some solutions to this, that these transcend politics. It transcends who's in the White House. It transcends all of that. It becomes a solution. It becomes hope. It becomes real help for people who are seeking a better life. So I'd like to, you mentioned the big one, what we can do in designating cartels as terrorist organizations, but dealing with DACA, dealing with what we do with people who have come in illegally, you know, what are some of the other, maybe in a nutshell?
Well, the big one right now is asylum. And I agree that we should allow these people to remain in the country. One, to avoid them coming and being in contact with the cartels. Two, to save their money and the thousands of dollars that they're funding the cartels, who they're funding when they give their money to these organizations, and submit their application and submit their claim from their home country, not necessarily from Mexico. I know there was a remain in Mexico policy by the prior administration, because unfortunately, we're going to find out that they're not going to qualify for that asylum. And the big difference is that now they're not in Indiana. They're not in lost for the last 2 or 3 years that we have as Americans will now have to take care of them. I am all for legal immigration. I'm a big proponent of legal immigration.
You and I are, you know, products of immigration. Yes. So yeah,
absolutely. I'm a product of, I always say that in my speeches, I'm a product of the American dream, but my parents did it the legal way. And I want to exploit that. I want to be able to have that legal system be better, be more fluid, more transparent. You know, people waiting 12, 13 years to get their permanent resident alien, that's got to change as well. What about them right now? They're being pushed aside. Imagine if you're right now waiting for your visa, waiting for that type of you've done everything right. You've done the health screening. You've done the criminal check. You've done everything that the government has asked you, but you see hundreds of thousands of people coming in right now, being allowed to come in, but you're not. And so it's not a fair system. This is not the way it works. We need to shift, and where we, for some reason, are not enforcing the law. And you say a solution, one of the solutions is very simple. I saw in illegal aliens board an airplane without an ID. When's the last time when I came back home and I boarded my airplane, I wouldn't have been allowed to board on the airplane without showing my identification and my boarding pass.
Last time I just traveled and I got pat down. My suitcase was destroyed, actually broken, because I had some kind of already opened mixed nuts. So you look at what's happening there and you're going, there is no sense.
So I even talked to one of the Border Patrol agents at the airport. And I said, listen, so if you're illegal, you get to come in. No ID. You get board an airplane. If you're an illegal alien, you get to board an airplane without identification. But if you're a U.S. citizen, you can't. This is not the right way that we're headed. I asked the Border Patrol agent, how can this be? Who is it that is allowing this? Who's waiving this law? Is it the airline? Who is it? Is the Border Patrol agents? He's like, it's not us. It's the administration that's allowing them to come in. They sent the order from the Department of Homeland Security Secretary to do it. They're giving is what they call a Form 213. And on that form, it has their name, their phone number, their date of birth. And I said, who filled out this information? I said, we filled it out, but who provided the information? Well, they did. And we took their word for it. So Jose Lopez, whatever, that's what they put on the 213. And they're using this information that the alien gave to provide to the airline as an identification. That's not the way it works. This is not the right. And you see the vulnerability that I'm describing here. There are people that do not agree with our values and our system. And I'm talking about terrorists here that are going to try to gain access to our country. And hopefully I'm so wrong. They want to come and do something to our and exploit those vulnerabilities to do harm. But this is the reality that we live in now. And that's when a solution is enforce the law, enforce the asylum laws, enforce the 1325 illegal entry. Those are completely being ignored. No one is being prosecuted. If there's a lot of individuals providing false statements to border agents, if you provide a false statement to an investigator, you will be arrested for lying to an agent or a U.S. law enforcement officer. It's called 1001 is a false statement. But these individuals get to lie and nobody gets prosecuted. Let's send a message that, in fact, you will be prosecuted. You will be put in jail. You will at least be sent back. How's that? And send that message instead of the message that continues to go on that you will be allowed to come into the country. No questions asked.
Thank you so much for your time today, man. We've learned a lot. We've gotten information that we're not seeing on the news. It's not filtered out and edited. And we're also looking forward to you, as you're listening, pick up the book, Agent Under Fire. You can get links on My Michelle Live. Victor, I look forward to the next time.
Thank you so much.
Like family now.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me on, Michelle.
I hope you're a little more informed today. Information is power, but something that is even more powerful than information is prayer. I believe it. And that's why we share the God story on My Michelle Live. I'm going to ask you, if you are a praying person, to do something absolutely crazy, outlandish. And that's to pray for the cartels, pray for those folks in the cartels, pray for their conviction, pray that God would just descend and change their hearts. And then, of course, we need to pray that the administration, those who are in control, will get past their politics and think about the people in real, practical ways, that we can see some bipartisan conversations that even in the midst of you and I, maybe it can start here, where we can talk with someone who thinks a little bit differently, believes a little bit differently, and come to some conclusions. Listen, pray, and make sure you share, like, and tell people about the My Michelle Live podcast as we share the God story. We'd love for you to be a part of what we do. You can give to support what we do. You can go to our website, and link up with the products that we actually believe in, like Calitrin, Real Bearded Men. And I'm giving you a chance to connect with our product of the month. And this month, it's a spa for your bum. Have you ever used a bidet? Oh my gosh. It's amazing. I don't know why we don't have bidets. I feel like America's so backwards because we're not walking around with really clean bums. So check it out at My Michelle Live, and we will catch you tomorrow for sports and this weekend for our special entertainment Easter edition of My Michelle Live. Thanks for listening.
More news and views at MyMichelleLive.com.